everyone. This is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Monday, everybody. Today, we are going to look at this week's new moon, which is in the sign of Virgo and will be in an applying opposition to Neptune in Pisces. This is a moon cycle coming up that will resemble the opening aspect of the new moon opposite Neptune from start to finish. That's the way new moon cycles or new moons work. Whatever's happening at the time of the new moon describes the quality of the seed that's being planted that will carry itself through the entirety of the cycle. So it's really significant that at the outset of this moon cycle, we have the new moon opposing Neptune. I think this is a new moon that will carry some features with it that we may not see coming. Neptune, among other things, is a planet of subtleties. And Neptune tends to slowly, Neptune transits, Neptune signatures around eclipses or moon cycles tend to slowly spread out and permeate the environment. And you don't always see them coming. So we're going to talk about some of the new moon's signatures, considering the opposition with Neptune today, and hopefully give us a sense of what's coming, even if there are some things about Neptunian moon cycles that will remain somewhat elusive until they're right in front of us. Anyway, that is our goal for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments in the comment section. You guys know that this helps the channel to grow, and I really appreciate that, getting the word out there about the work and content that I create every day. It's really helpful. So really appreciate that. You can find transcripts of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com. If you have a story to share now or ever about the transits that we discuss from day to day on the show, please use the hashtag grabbed in the comment section and then tell us your story. Tell us the name of the transit you with the hashtag grabbed, or you can email us your story, grabbed@nightlightastrology.com. We really appreciate hearing from you guys. And hopefully we did a Venus retrograde edition recently, some Venus retrograde stories that were pretty fun. Hopefully we'll do another one soon. In the meantime, I'm in the midst of promotion mode now for my new course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, which begins in the month of November. So coming up soon, we have our new course. I'm going to put it up on the screen so you can check it out. This is nightlightastrology.com, website where you can find everything, all the classes that I teach and the readings that I offer. Under the courses page, click on the first year course. It starts on November 18th. Registration is open. You can see what is included in the course. It is a course in ancient natal astrology with an emphasis on learning how to read birth charts. There are 30 classes on the year. We also have breakout study sessions in between our major units of study led by my tutoring staff. So there's extra support there if you need it. We also have a forum discussion that is staffed with tutors so that you can always have your questions answered within a day. We always strive to get everything that's been asked answered within a day. There are 12 guest lectures outside of our normal classes, 30 classes on the year that I teach. Lots of bonus material, enough reading and homework and optional quizzes to last your lifetime. If you have an interest in learning astrology and taking your knowledge to the next level, I highly recommend this immersive program that me and my staff have perfected over the years and continue to try to make better and better every year. At the bottom of the page, you can find the ways to register. There's an early bird payment, saves you $500 off. There's a payment plan. And what I'm most excited about is we have opened up registration for our need-based tuition. So we have a limited number of need-based tuition contracts available for people who would like to take the course but need a little help to make it happen. If that's you, please click the Apply Now button. If for whatever reason you're working within a set budget, we understand that. We understand that people earn at different levels and have different obligations and life circumstances. We want to make sure that your spiritual desire to learn and study a sacred subject doesn't price you, that you're not pricing people out who genuinely want to learn something that we think is of deep spiritual value. So we make this option available for people like you who may appreciate that help. So if you have any questions about anything, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. Hope to see some of you in classes soon. Great to be starting another program. And right as we're getting back into Pluto's return to Aquarius will be happening during this program. So that's strong programs that we've had as this change of outer planet Pluto has been taking place. It's really interesting to see the way the class is shifting and the way that the kinds of people that are coming into the program represent or reflect that change as well. It's a really good time to study astrology as Pluto is moving into a sign that in many ways could make astrology more viable in the eyes of more people, in the same way that you have more and more people taking seriously the therapeutic benefits of things like psychedelic plant medicines that have been around for thousands of years. Astrology, yoga, and other spiritual technologies, I think, are going to be becoming more interesting to people. And people, I think, will be taking them a little bit more seriously. Of course, you always run the risk of astrology becoming sort of watered down when peddled to the masses or whatever. But our programs are designed to give you an education in classical ancient astrology that will that can really instill within you the value of astrology as a form of spirituality. So at any rate, I'm rambling on and I can't wait to get into this new moon cycle. So let's do it. All right, we have, let me move some things around here. And I am going to put the new moon up on the screen so that you can see it first. Let's do that. All right, here we go. All right, here's the new moon on the screen, and it is coming through on Thursday, September 14th. You can see it forming right there in the evening of Thursday, the 14th. This is happening as Mercury is turning direct after its retrograde in Virgo. But the most interesting feature of this new moon is the fact that, or really the major feature we're going to talk about today at any rate, I'll mention a few others, but we have this new moon moving into an opposition with Neptune. So within about 5 degrees, the sun is moving through the opposition. The new moon is therefore opposed to Neptune. And that provides us with an amazingly rich cycle, a signature at the beginning of the cycle that suggests a lot of learning and growth, the potential for healing, and the opportunity to contact an archetype like Neptune at a deep level. It's something we have to take advantage of. It's not like it just happens for everyone. But in my experience, if you make a little conscious effort and include the intention, which in many ways you're doing just by taking in content like this, or other astrologers who are talking about a new moon cycle with Neptune, just bringing it into your awareness in some way is a way of it. That is a way of reaching out and starting to make contact with the archetype. I think that's how we heal and grow with astrology in many ways. Is nothing more. It's not what's going to come, what's going to happen, all that sort of part of it. But it's also, can I make contact with the energies or the archetypes, the gods, the patterns, these divine, intelligent patterns that are going to be presenting themselves in the moon cycle ahead? Can I bring them into my awareness and commune with them? Because when I do, they impart so many blessings and gifts, if nothing else, not just lessons that teach us how to do something or be better at something, but that just give us the gift of feeling closer to this beautiful reality that we live in, because sometimes we don't feel so close to it. We feel apart from it somehow. We long to reconnect or reunite. In fact, the word religion comes from the word religio in Latin, if I'm getting it right, which means to reconnect, like, if I remember correctly, like ligaments that have been torn, like reconnecting them. We need spiritual ACL surgeries. Is that a ligament? Tendon? I can't remember which one it is. So anyway, in thinking about this, I started forming some ideas about what this new moon opposite Neptune could bring, considering who Neptune is, and at least how I've come to know Neptune over the course of 13 years of professional astrology and so many clients and classes and students and personal transits and so forth. Like, who is Neptune? What is Neptune? And how does Neptune interact with a new moon cycle? The opposition to Neptune is an important detail here, because when a New moon cycle starts in an opposition to any planet. It is as though that planet will represent a kind of archetypal tension that will be built in to the cycle. And the tension will rest in the nature of the planet itself. Every planet carries with it the possibility of different kinds of tensions that will be presented to us. It's like every, like Pluto has different kinds of dualities that come with it. Neptune has different kinds of dualities. And those dualities will become the source of creative tension within the cycle. So our job is to bring awareness to the kinds of Neptunian dualities that we may be presented with in the cycle ahead. Now, this cycle will take us, by the way, just let me just pull it up and I'll tell you the exact date. But the cycle ahead starts on the 14th. But we don't get all the way through it until later on in October. The new moon is on the 14th of October. And what's interesting is that this new moon cycle, we ride the Neptunian wave of this new moon cycle. And where do we end up? The next new moon is a solar eclipse. So that adds, there's a gravitas to a cycle that concludes and begins again anew with a solar eclipse. This cycle, in other words, is moving us into eclipse season. That makes the Neptunian dualities all the more important, because at the conclusion of this cycle, with those dualities comes an eclipsing of the light, which represents a significant change of direction for us, a change of in our sense of purpose. So what kinds of Neptunian tensions are we looking at? Number one on my list, in no particular order as always, is the return of an enchanted cosmos. So one of the most magical things about Neptune is that where there is a dryness, well, let's call that dryness the dryness of living in a world devoid of spirits, gods, ghosts, omens, signs, dreams, visions. Although I'd like to say, because, you know, oh, I've done loads of psychedelic medicine and, you know, and I've had like lots of different, I've used lots of different kinds of spiritual technologies that I just never come off from the high. And I'm an astrologer, so I live in an enchanted cosmos 24/7. It's not true. There are many days where I just feel like I'm in the desert. Spiritually speaking, you know, like there's no moisture here. And here I'm thinking of water, a Neptunian symbol. Neptune is often related to the waters, whether it's the ocean or I'm thinking here of water as the water of imagination, of romance, of spirituality and mysticism, of magic and connection, of intimacy, sensuality. I'm thinking of water as life. But not just biological life, all life, the magic of life. It's an enchanted cosmos is a Neptunian cosmos in so much as it's sort of fluid and flowing and rich and multivalent and nuanced and subtle and, you know, sublime and ecstatic, but also, you know, gentle and sweet. It's all of the things, as they say. So sometimes you feel like you're just walking through a desert. You've lost the connection. You're not connected. You're living in a disconnected state. We all know what that's like. But what's so magical about this universe is the universe seems to create deserts just so that it can pour down rain. I'm thinking, I guess I can't help but think, I saw a headline recently as I'm making this of the Burning Man event that they were unable to get out because of flooding. That happens, you know, that there is this kind of, there's this juxtaposition between deserts in our life psychologically and it's in the geography of human life. And so it's present in the geography of our spiritual lives as well. We have these desertous terrains that are dry and hard, and then we have these deluges that come down. We have an Earth new moon opposite a very watery Neptune in a water sign like Pisces, a sign that exalts Venus and a sign that is the feminine home of Jupiter, which is a very fertile romantic sign, in other words. So one of the things that can happen in a cycle like this is somehow where we've been, when or however we've come to find ourselves in a desert, it rains and we find that spirit has returned. I know that that sounds probably really simple to some people, like, you know, what, you know, like, yeah, like, but it's the, to me, what's amazing is that you can actually time it out. You can look at a cycle like this and say, in this cycle, there's a very good chance that some area of my life that has been dry and infertile will become fertile again. And flowers of magical fruit will just start coming forth. So watch for it. Watch for where dryness has crept in. Watch for it to be watered. And I've just broadly called that the return of an enchanted cosmos. Neptune transits in general, though, what's amazing about them is that they will amplify. And at the beginning of a Neptune transit to a planet in your natal chart, like say Venus, Neptune will often, like, let's say you're dating someone and you're just like, my God, this relationship is dry. And hopefully that doesn't happen to you, but Neptune transits to Venus will often start that way by amplifying the feeling that something is dry, only so that you can, you know, meet someone unexpectedly and suddenly it starts pouring. It's like Neptune sets us up. We all think probably of Neptune, like the textbooks of modern astrology teach us to think of Neptune as just the experience of the water of spirit or something like that, like a dove descending or whatever. But in my experience, Neptune will amplify turn up the volume on the dichotomy between the mundane and the magical or enchanted, because all planets work through dualities. In our human experience, you know, it's easy to see dualities as things that have nothing to do with one another, but it's the tension between them pulling in different directions that's orchestrating experience. So when Neptune comes by, the distinction between dryness and moisture gets amplified. And for many of us, that will be amplified this cycle. Number two, uncertainty, survival, and prayer. As I speak, I have a dry mouth. That's funny. Okay. So I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I've been thinking a lot about what it may have been like to live at different eras in history. I know it sounds weird. I don't know if I'm alone in doing this. It's probably because we've been watching Outlander, which is about time travel. So I've been thinking about it a lot lately. Where would I time travel to, or what like era would I, you know, would I visit? But one thing that's been consistent with me, there's been phases in my life where I've gotten really interested in certain historical periods. Like I went through a whole phase where I read and learned a lot about the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, blah, blah, blah. Different, often it's like American history. I don't know, just like a weird thing that I get into sometimes. But anyway, one thing that I can never unsee or undo, what happened when I went into the Amazon and sat with ayahuasqueros that came from lineages of indigenous people from, you know, South Central America, Peru, in different settings. I did this over a decade. And there's lots, by the way, I don't say this to, romanticize the whole of ayahuasca culture or world nowadays either. When I did this, it was very early in the development of like ayahuasca tourism. It wasn't the thing that it is now. There were problems with it then too. But what I also took so many beautiful gifts that came from the experiences. So I just say that as like a qualifying remark. Anyway, so when I was in the Amazon, one thing that became really clear to me was that when you're living in nature, and it's raw, it's primal, and it's very powerful. It's not in any way, I'm not speaking down to it at all. Like, I'll never forget. I came back to it was like a thatch roofed like hut, and I had mosquito netting and like a hammock. And I walked up the steps, and there was an enormous pile of crap, like right outside my door. And I just remember thinking, like, if anything really wanted to get me here, like, it probably wouldn't have a hard time. But, there's a funny way in which the closer we are to the natural world and having to live with and in the elements, the more it's like that week or 10 days of my life, whatever it was when I first went, and I was in that setting. You know, this was like 24 hours up river from Iquitos, and then dugout canoes another 6 hours, something like that. So it was like in the jungle. And I'll just never forget the way my mind changed. As I'm talking, I'm like, this is going to sound like such a druggie. But what happened was I started noticing that after my ayahuasca ceremonies in the jungle and just being in the jungle, in between ceremonies, completely sober, but I was perceiving the sounds that I heard differently. Nature was teeming with the expression of signs, omens, the communication of spirit. It wasn't just animals. And I realized it was very easy for me to see the natural world as like animal versus human, because the world I live in is very, in many ways, artificially cut off from the elements, the raw elements, like I live with heating and air conditioning and like that, you know? So the first thing is I started to listen. If I was thinking something and I was kind of going down a negative path, I might hear a bird and its quality of voice, and it would force me to pause, almost like it was asking me to bring the vibration of my thoughts up a notch. Like, you're kind of going down like, where are you skating off to? But I'd hear a bird, and the bird might help me adjust my thinking. And I just remember this feeling like, one of the sad things, I mean, one of the ways in which we've gotten cut off from an enchanted cosmos, in other words, is that we don't live close enough to, our own fragile state, like in the elements, near death, near things that can devour you, to also be able to hear the voice of divine intelligence that is in trees and plants and streams and so many things. I'm sure some of you are like, amen, and I'm preaching to the choir. But I realize that it is the presence of uncertainty for my physical health or welfare, the need to survive, or being closer to a survival mindset. And by that, I don't mean fight or flight. I just mean, how am I going to, I have to literally work my body with the elements to stay alive. Not that I was doing it that, but it was closer to that than I've ever been. And that in those states, being closer to the elements, prayer, or I'll just call it communication with spirit, was so much more, it was just wide open. Of course, I do attribute, you know, like guzzling psychedelic beverages. But like, the closer we are to not knowing what's going to happen when we contract some kind of disease or sickness. You know, I remember when my mother and her partner were in the ICU with COVID, and it's just really uncertain what's going to happen to them. What it's in those moments. Here's another story. I remember my sister got in a car accident, and it forced them to sort of prematurely do a C-section because she was pregnant when she got in the car accident. So they had to do a C-section. When I heard that news, and I had not yet heard that everything went okay and da-da-da, you live in this state of uncertainty for a minute. In that uncertainty, it is amazing how open you suddenly become, how receptive, how your senses change. Uncertainty, unknowing, and the humility of our intelligence, just realizing I know very little because I'm suddenly not in control. It's funny how if we can open ourselves in that space and just humbly open our hands, sort of get down on our metaphorical knees, wow, what information and insight come pouring in. And I just loosely say, I use the word prayer just to loosely denote that what comes in and the kind of communication that we can participate in changes drastically when we're in states of not knowing or being really uncertain or even afraid or on the edge of life and death somehow. It feels like you're being flooded. That's Neptune. So it's amazing to me how like a cycle like this that we're about to go through, a moon cycle, can bring us back in touch with a profound spiritual intelligence, but it often comes through overwhelming circumstances where suddenly we're a little bit more connected to raw elemental energies that are flowing quickly, maybe overwhelming our sense of control. And there's a profound sense of uncertainty about what will happen. Prayer means something different in that space. Communication with spirit becomes much more vivid. And some people, you know, just peel right out, of course, with it. So you know, having grounding practices can be really useful as well. Anyway, number three, the unseen and the unknown. So I use this because something amazing about Neptune transits is whether it's connection in dreams, you know, speaking with a dead relative in a dream, an ancestor, having precognitive experiences. This is crazy. So speaking of this, like I had this experience very recently. I was playing my guitar and I was like, gosh, you know, when I haven't been playing guitar this often and this regularly and getting into it, as I've shared with you guys for a long time. Thank you, Uranus square my natal Venus. So I was like, okay, I'm getting back into music at this deep level. And I thought, you know, when I was a kid, God, I broke strings all the time. I was really wailing on it, you know, and I haven't, you know, I guess I just don't play as hard anymore. And I was a little bit sad. It was such a weird thing to be sad about. I was like, I miss just busting strings when I'm playing. And I was like, well, I'm not going to just hammer on my guitar just to bust the string. That's stupid. I had this little voice that popped up and said, don't worry, you'll break one soon. And I was like, what? Like, that was weird. Like, that was really creepy weird. Like, that's kind of stuff. Maybe it happens to you guys a lot. I wouldn't be surprised. You guys are all way cooler than me and my little hair. Me and my little spike hair. But, you know, But then I sat down and I broke a string. Next time I sat down and played guitar, I was just playing. String just popped. And I looked at it and I was like, that's really cool. That was really neat. I'm going to save this broken string. Thank you, Guitar Genie. So one thing that's really cool about a cycle that includes this opposition to Neptune is the tension you can feel between your normal way of knowing and connection to things that are just a little bizarre. Dreams, omens, signs, precognition. I know so-and-so is going to call me. And then, boom, they show up on, you know, your cell phone's vibrating and there they are. These kinds of things happen with Neptune cycles. And in my experience, it's best not to, put them in some kind of congratulations, I'm super spiritual drawer, you know, but rather just let those moments fill your cup back up and just revive your curiosity. Let them be like water on your dry plant. Oh, wow. That was really cool. Thank you, Guitar Genie, for returning my faith in the universe. I now play my guitar like it is alive, which is how I should be playing it. You know what I mean? It's a being. I love, this leads me into the next one, which is superstition, spirits, and the charmed world. So there was this moment in Outlander that really charmed me. If you guys know the characters, anyway, Jamie gives Claire a knife. And I think it's for cooking or for her herbal or surgery work or something like that. Anyway, he says, you need to give me a coin for it. And she's like, what? And he's like, because the knife needs to know that it's yours. And it will if you give a coin for it. Could be a penny. Doesn't matter. And she's like, oh. And she kind of smiles like, I like that. But this is true. When you get a new lamp, talk to it. One of the things we do, which is a little, it's probably a little over the top, but we every time we leave the house on vacation, we all say goodbye, house. Please be, take care of everything in it. It's a person. Ancient people from all around the world of all different, all different people and races have always believed that land and places have personalities, that inanimate, quote unquote, inanimate objects have being and consciousness. Neptune can return us to an animate world. A cycle with Neptune in it invites us to talk to your lamp. I'm thinking of the I love lamp. Oh no, how does it? I think that's it. Do you guys know which one I'm talking? It's a movie with what's his name? Will Ferrell. My wife Ashley knows how that part. She says that all the time, and it makes me laugh. Okay, but it's true that for a long time. If folk traditions from whether it's, Scandinavia or South America or sub-Saharan Africa, there are rituals and little traditions that we have that some people might call superstitious, but that in my mind are about connecting to the living presence in things and how we do things, whether it's how you cook and the songs you sing or the prayers you say at this time of day or whatever. Neptune just invites us to create ritual in our life to bring charm back to the way that we live. And charm is it's the little metaphorical bell that's ringing around experiences that makes them more pleasing and fun and interesting. It's not mechanistic, it's relational. But the other downside about a Neptune transit like this, and this is a big one, is that if you think about, this made me think of Outlander. It's like my whole world. Ashley's like, I'm really excited for the series to be over. And I was like, I love the series, but I can't wait for it to be over. She's like, why? Why don't you just savor it and enjoy it while you're watching it? I was like, no, I can't wait for it to get over because it's like, I just see everything in the world through Outlander until it's over. And then I can cleanse my palate. It's the one problem that I have with TV series like that. First of all, they're 13 episodes. They're all an hour long each. There's 8 seasons. It's like, it'd be like if we replaced we replaced like a fiction book, you know, just like a normal 300-page fiction book, and said, every time anyone writes a book now, it needs to be Game of Thrones length or Lord of the Rings length. You know, it's an interesting to see the form develop. And, you know, it's like when I was a kid, man, 2-hour movie at the theater, that was it. Now it's like 75 hours. But anyway, the bad thing about superstition, and this comes from Outlander, is that, you know, before people understood what ether was that Claire uses to put patients under for surgeries, they didn't know what it was. They thought she was a witch, you know, killing people and bringing them back from the dead with some kind of spell, right? They didn't know what germs were because they're, you can't see them or whatever. It's like there's the same thing that makes it possible to communicate with spirit is often the exact same energy that makes us, that places us in some kind of denial about basic, like basic useful facts or rational information. For example, if a woman miscarries, there's one scene that was like, well, if the woman miscarries, it means that in the spirit world, I think the way that this was put was that the man was not able to dominate the woman's spirit. She was more dominant than he was, and so her body wouldn't take his seed, and then she would potentially reject or abandon the man. It's like, well, that's interesting. I'm not going to – who am I to judge? I mean, I think my wife could beat the shit out of me. We still have a couple of kids, so I guess I'm okay. But, you know, but the point being that there's something about Neptune world that produces the Salem witch trials. You know what I mean? That burns people bringing valuable insight into the way that our universe works or is, and they say those people. You know, Galileo, or kill them, you know, off with their head. So we have to be careful because a cycle like this can also bring out the delusional, the deranged, and the denial of basic facts, grounded, basic, rational ways of understanding things. But, you know, it's funny how, like, it will tip in the opposite direction, too. Like, you cannot have a connection with spirit if you're stuck in rational land, reducing everything to parts and processes and mechanists in a mechanistic objectified worldview. It's just like, well, you'll be in a desert and kiss the water and kiss spirit goodbye. If you've used technology, science, and reason, you know, so much that you have completely isolated yourself from those forces of nature, then is it such a surprise that so many people go seeking, you know, Amazonian cocktails and, you know, tripping your brains out in the jungle just to remember some of what's real beyond the walls of the city. You know what I mean? At least that's how I feel about myself when I look at myself and what I was looking for and how it was able to have such an impact. I think about, you know, I remember talking to a man in a cafe in Iquitos, Peru. It was a Peruvian man who spoke some English. And the idea or thought of like drinking ayahuasca, you know, he was like, well, you know, is a person spiritually sick? You know, they have like spirit possession or like, you know, I was like, well, sort of, you know, it's like, I'm from the United States of America. So yes, you know, but it's just interesting because to him, like there was nothing about ayahuasca that was like magical or, I mean, I can't say that. Ayahuasca was a part of his worldview and wasn't new or interesting to think about communication with spirits or things like that. And I just remember being really impressed by that, talking to that gentleman. Anyway, last but not least, extreme dichotomies in faith and morality. You can see sinners versus saints, the pure versus the impure, the moral and the immoral, and the need to purify, cleanse. People love to romanticize Neptune in modern astrology, as they do the 12th house as well. Neptune is a planet that, if you read the work of Richard Tarnas or Liz Green, very revered archetypal astrologers who have shown Neptune's presence in things like genocide, the Holocaust. Neptune is none of the planets are good or evil, right? Morality is like one lens through which it's its own archetypal lens that can be like fitted onto any other archetype, as like, because archetypes layer on each other. This is why we have aspects and aspect patterns and things like that. But Neptune will often see things in terms of the faithful and the damned, or the sinners and the saints, and the pure and the impure. And Neptune's desire for a kind of, you know, a promised land or spiritual utopia or heaven or salvation, and the desire to see everyone join in one body of like a belief or an ideal, can be very all-consuming. Neptune, for that reason, has a long history of being involved with cults or with mass delusions and conversions of people by persuasive political figures who can, you know, who can be very intoxicating, right? So there's this, it's the same reason why people with Neptune will drink alcohol to try to deny something that is too painful, you know? So Neptune doesn't always like this world and will sometimes present us with extremes between otherworldly ideals of perfection. This is the same reason that Neptune will provide you with an image of the perfect partner that you know is actually not really healthy to keep in your mind, because people can't be perfect. So Neptune-Venus transits have a lot to do with reconciling our longings and our ideals with the fragility of our human nature in love, right? So be careful, because this cycle can also present us with real big extremes between like moral, religious, spiritual kinds of dichotomies that can become very extreme. Wouldn't be surprising, by the way, in this cycle to see, you know, okay, it's hurricane season or whatever, and we've got like, you know, we have a new moon opposite Neptune. That's, you know, sometimes the signatures of like shifting plates and oceans and waters and things like that will be like sort of biblical and literal. It's like, you gotta be the two things at the same time. Although I definitely have grown, I've been around people who take the Bible so literally that I guess it's not surprising, but you get what I'm saying. I hope that now, going through this, that you do see a few things coming, that you do see them as they rise. As Neptune energy tends to permeate the atmosphere, I hope that this talk helps you to see the water that you're swimming in over the course of the moon cycle to come. And I apologize for my many wanderings and too many references to Outlander. I love you guys and hope you're having a great day. We'll see you again soon.